Good morning. Thanks for joining me on the Meg Ellison Show. I appreciate you tuning in. Okay, I just have to send a shout out to one of the last callers, Joe, that called in from Humbird, H-U-M-B-I-R-D. Maybe I'm the only one out there that was not aware of Humbird. It's an unincorporated, very small town, I believe, and I looked on a map, and so I've established it. But thank you so much for calling in. I had not heard of it. I actually will ask my husband, who is almost a lifelong resident of Wisconsin, if he's heard of Humbird. Every once in a while, I'll say, hey, have you ever heard of that town? Nope, he hasn't. So maybe I'm not the only geographically challenged one out there that presently lives, is a citizen of Wisconsin, but very grateful that you are tuning in from Humbird, which as I'm looking, you know, I don't know how many miles it is from here, but I see Black River Falls somewhat close and all kinds of Osseo, Alma Center, etc. So anyway, thank you for tuning in and thanks for calling in as well. So joining me this morning from Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, one of my favorite organizations in the state, and I'm not just saying that because I have a guest on that's listening, but I say that because I am grateful for all of the work that they do on behalf of those of us who believe in freedom and liberty for citizens here in Wisconsin and believe in defending the law. And Corey Brewer is Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty's Education Council, an attorney for Will, participated in their first annual school board summit to help restore American education in Wisconsin. Good morning, Corey. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for joining me. I was very happy to hear about this event, and I wanted to get you on to share some of the content and the success of this event. And obviously, now that you've announced that it's your first, I mean, this was a presser after it occurred, but it announced that it's your first annual. I presume a second follows that and so on. And that's really exciting to hear.
Oh, yes. We would really like to host this event again next year. You know, what really prompted it, and this took place last Friday in Waukesha, we had just over 100 attendees join us for the first school board summit. And what we had been hearing from school board members and community members, particularly school board members, is sure there are trainings available to them, but they want more and they want alternatives. They want more information to effectively do their jobs at the local level. And one of the things we really wanted to impress upon them is the authority and the influence that they do have to make really positive change at the local level and help the kids in our schools, and let them know what are their roles, what are their duties, and then dive in, and we can talk about this too, to some of the frequently asked questions that we see both in Wisconsin and really across the whole country right now as well.
So talk about some of the school district, well, I guess the individuals attended and the different school districts that were represented at your event.
Yeah, we were really excited. You know, we invited every school board member in the state, no matter which way you lean politically. We wanted this to be an event for everyone with complete unbiased information about your role, about legal and policy updates to essentially help them effectively do their jobs and serve their local communities. For this first summit that we held, we had folks travel over 4 hours to come. And a lot of them were from southeastern Wisconsin, but many were not. Many were from central Wisconsin, kind of Stevens Point area, Marshfield area. There was a real variety of individuals, of school board members, and we had a handful of administrators that attended as well. So we were really glad to see the turnout for folks that wanted to come hear what we had to present about.
So let's talk about it. Speaking of that, great segue. You said present about. Talk about some of the panels and presentations that attendees were privy to.
Yes, we had 6 panels throughout this day-long event. So it was a lot of information in a relatively short amount of time. One panel was about what are your roles and duties under state law. We also included a little mini presentation about open records laws and open meetings laws to give them better understanding of that. one of the panels, and we can dive into one or more of these if you would like to, but one of the panels was on equality in the classroom, which was really focusing on the requirement for not discriminating on the basis of race, and how can school board members kind of combat some of the troublesome diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI, policies that are kind of being pushed upon them. One of the panels was about school finance. What kinds of things should boards be looking for? What questions should they ask? What's happening at the federal level? What can they look for in the local communities? So we had something about making the most out of the funds the district has. Of course, we had one on parental rights and student gender identity. That's just a question that we get all the time. And we wanted to both let school boards know why it's important to involve parents in their kids' education, especially on this topic, both from a legal perspective and a medical perspective. We had a clinical psychologist join us for that one as well, who's a kind of a worldwide expert. So that was one of our panels. We had one on just partnerships between the school board members and the superintendent. Maybe they don't agree on everything, but how can you navigate your roles in a way that's still going to move the district in the right direction? And then the last one, we had two teachers join us, or I should say former teachers. They're now both policy experts and writers. And they wanted to talk from a teacher perspective. What should school boards know about curriculum, about student behavior, and really about how to support teachers? What can the board do to support their teachers in the classroom?
So were you able to, because I just had a guest on and I have to rack my brain. It was probably, I mean, honestly, it was probably just yesterday, but I don't know how many guests ago that was, but that talked about student discipline problems in the school system and how, well, and frankly, how problematic that is for, and it prevents, you know, the other students from their ability to learn. Now, is that something that you received feedback from, I mean, was there an opportunity for I guess participants to either weigh in on topics that they were concerned about that they needed assistance with, or just kind of a sharing of grievances?
Yeah, there was some time set aside for question and answer. We didn't hear, I think on that topic in particular, I don't think we heard any personal experiences, but we did get a lot of feedback after the fact that, oh my goodness, was it sure helpful to hear from a teacher who's been through this and learn about what we as school board members, what can we actually do? So one of the questions, I actually moderated the panel with the two teachers. And one of the things I asked this kind of broad question, how can school boards support teachers? And I asked it to Daniel Buck. And the other panelist, Robert Pundicio, right away said, I know exactly what you're going to say. And without hesitating, Daniel Buck, who has written about this topic, said, you need to give teachers the tools to manage student behavior in their classrooms. Because if there's a disruptive student, then like you said, Meg, the rest of the class can't learn. And depending on how disruptive the student is, it could be a safety issue as well. We've seen a lot of this restorative justice recently. And I think what Daniel said at the conference was, if there's a student that is misbehaving, that is not complying with the rules of the classroom, and a teacher says, okay, go to the principal's office, the principal can't then send the student back with a bag of Cheetos. You know, it just doesn't work that way, because we need classrooms where students can learn. That's what it all comes down to. And boards should put policies in place to allow teachers to really be able to manage their classrooms and have that support from the administration to do that as well.
So I see that you also unveiled the second edition of your model school board policies. I know you touched on that, but can you talk, is there any sort of, I'll rephrase this, are there guidelines for school for school boards in the state of Wisconsin? I mean, I guess, does DPI put something out and this is the alternative to it? Or, I mean, how are school board or school districts, how are they guided in that way by DPI?
Yeah, that is a great question. DPI does not put out model policies. And just going back to the very, very basics, our state law gives school board members really broad powers and also a lot of duties. And that authority rests with the school board. It's very important. Now, the school board, when exercising those, has to do it in a way that's consistent with state law, state administrative rules, federal law, and they can delegate to the superintendent. Superintendent's kind of like a CEO. You want a very good superintendent that works well with the board to help the district run well. But when it comes to the policies that are actually adopted and implemented, there aren't a lot of options for school boards. A lot of them use a private company called Neola, and they get this big bank of policies, and they're often told by maybe the superintendent, maybe legal counsel, maybe this is just what they've always done. All right, here's the policies. This is what we're going to implement. And we wanted to provide an alternative to that because we found that some of them are not written clearly. They don't provide for enough transparency, parental involvement, enough of a framework to help the district be governed well and run well. So we wanted to provide additional policies that board members can consider. You know, maybe one of the examples is, what do we say, for example, teacher professional development transparency. That's not a requirement at the state level. We don't have a state law that says, hey, communities should know what the teachers are using as their professional development. But a district could, a school board could put that in place. Because a lot of times parents will see something that it troubles them, something controversial in the classroom. And sometimes they say, oh my goodness, that teacher is just so inappropriate. I have a problem with that teacher. Well, 99% of the time, it's coming from beyond that teacher. I think a lot of people don't realize that some of the trainings that they're receiving, and some of those do come from DPI, going back to DPI, those are coming from beyond the teacher. So the community should know, what are the teachers being trained on? And it should just create more transparency to see, okay, what are they being trained on? Not only in the colleges of higher ed, you know, Will put out a report a couple years ago that kind of showed how the education colleges are pretty one-sided, but in the professional development trainings as well.
So was there any kind of common thread or, I guess, common concerns that were expressed among a significant number of those that participated at the event?
You know, I don't know. I don't actually think we had most of it was responses or questions specific to each of the panels. There were quite a few questions about open records and open meetings laws, and Will has a guide on that as well, the Citizen's Guide to Open Government. DOJ also has a really helpful guide on those questions to help public officials navigate that. We also got a lot of feedback on our panel about racial non-discrimination. School board members were really grateful to be given that legal background so that when they're being pitched DEI positions or programs or whatever it might be, they know the status of the law and they know and can confidently say, hey, we cannot treat our students differently because of their race. It's not acceptable. It's not permissible legally. And frankly, it's disrespectful to the students to not treat them as individuals. So that was one where we received a lot of feedback as well. And then just the student gender identity topic as well. We brought in Nikki Neely from Parents Defending Education to kind of give an overview of what she's seeing all over the country. Luke Berg moderated that panel. Our client from the Kettle Moraine case, Tammy Fournier, was on there to share her personal story as a parent with a child who struggled with gender struggled with questioning her gender identity, I should say. And then Dr. Erica Anderson, who actually is transgender and specializes in treating individuals who are, you know, questioning their gender, she very, very strongly believes that this is something that parents need to be involved in and something where we need to look at each individual child and not immediately affirm every child, you know, every minor child without looking at those underlying issues and what each child is going through. And unfortunately, and some people, probably your listeners are a little bit more familiar with this, but when you tell folks, yeah, schools are allowing children to change their name and pronouns and essentially their gender in school and keeping that secret from parents, they can't believe it. They can't believe that's actually happening, but it is across the country and in Wisconsin, and it needs to stop. And it can stop with school boards. They can put in place policies where parents are in charge of their kids' upbringing.
Imagine that. What a novel concept. So I see that your this new edition of the policies that were model school board policies included some not just updates, but just new policies. And I'm curious about this because I don't have kids in the schools anymore, but cell phones in the classroom. So what does your policy recommend?
We need to get cell phones out of the classroom, period.
I was curious what you'd say, but yeah.
Period. I've personally been hearing from teachers that struggle with this. A lot of schools have a policy that if a child is not paying attention, they can, you know, take the kid's phone away. But I think what we're actually, and they feel right now like, oh, we're never going to be able to navigate this. These phones, these kids just have their phones or their AirPods constantly. They're listening to something. They're looking at something. They're distracted. They're not interacting with their peers. But actually across the country, this is picking up momentum. And it's showing that not only is it better for focus and kids actually learning, but their interaction with their classmates and their teachers too. So we wrote this policy in a way where teachers can either collect phones at the front of the classroom as kids enter. There's specific cell phone lockers and things like that now that house the phones, or at the beginning of the school day. It's kind of up to them. Do they want to ban them for the whole school day or just prohibit them during class time? But this is something that is actually gaining a lot of traction, would be good for students, would be good for teachers. There's actually a book right now, too, that I'm reading called The Anxious Generation that is really insightful on this topic. And one of the recommendations in it is to get cell phones out of schools, smartphones in particular.
I'm not surprised. I think I'm not a student anymore. Well, maybe I guess I'm just a student of politics at this point, but it frightens me how attached I have become to my phone, my smartphone. And, you know, it's really something that it's sort of an addictive kind of behavior in my opinion. And, you know, like every week I'll get a notice, I have an iPhone, I'll get a notice about how if my screen time has gone up or gone down, and I'm always cheering on when I see that it's gone down. Yay, I didn't use my phone as much. But I mean, it's something I'm glad that you're addressing it, because I think it's something that I believe that, along with many other issues, that school boards need to be proactive about, as opposed to waiting until, you know, there's a significant problem. And I presume we're probably at that point anyway. But do you have any data on any school districts that have implemented a no smartphone policy for the entire school day, or, I mean, at least have some sort of limited?
Yeah, there's some studies. I don't have them on the top of my head, but they're linked in that policy, in that model policy, which it's available free for public at schoolboardpolicies.org. So we have a few linked in there. I'd be happy to kind of dig and find a couple more. But you mentioned being kind of, you have a habit of checking your phone. Imagine what that's like for a child, for a kid. And
well, it's conditioning them. I mean, they've been conditioned from whenever they got that phone, that this is sort of part of their, I don't know, consciousness.
Yeah.
And it's frightening.
Yeah. And a lot of kids too, I would have to find the study about this, but their anxiety actually goes down when none of them have a phone. And parents are often, well, we need to get the phones away, but I don't want my child to be the only one who doesn't have a phone.
Right.
We need to all do this. This isn't even, I mean, obviously Will drafted the model policy for school boards to consider, but I do think, for our society and particularly in schools, that it would be a good policy to prohibit cell phone use definitely during instructional time, perhaps for more of the day as well.
And I like, too, that you've included financial literacy instruction because, isn't that a critical component of just being a responsible, productive, accountable citizen? So, well, Corey Brewer, we're out of time. I'm very grateful that you were able to join me this morning and have a conversation about this summit. I look forward to, and, I don't want to put the cart before the horse, but I look forward to perhaps having some sort of event like that up here in our listening area so that our school board members and citizens can participate and see what the best practices for school districts in Wisconsin.
Yes, thank you very much for having me.
Well, thanks. And they can get information on all of this on your website, will-law.org. Is that correct?
Yeah, I would say go to schoolboardpolicies.org. We tried to make it as easy as
that's
possible,
your,
but that'll,
that's your
that'll
URL.
Take you right.
Okay.
Yes, it'll take you to, it's on the Will website.
Schoolboardpolicies.org. Mm-hmm. Well, that's even more straightforward than Will, but either one will get you there. Corey Brewer,
yes.
Thanks again for joining me. I look forward to our next conversation. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you. Going to the 10:30 news, followed by your calls on the other side. If you'd like to join the conversation, here's your chance, 715-845-2155 on the Meg Ellefson Show on WSAU.